Welcome back in, everyone, to a wonderful new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are joined today by a multi-hyphenate artist who we're so excited to have on. We're joined by the writer, performer, and producer, Melody Bates, who's here to talk to us about Melody Bates and Fifth Wall Studios' presentation of All the Birds of the World. It's playing April 4th through the 6th at Fifth Wall Studio, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting eventbrite.com. We're very excited to have on our guest today and to learn more about this show. So with that, let us welcome on our guest, Melody Bates. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Ah, thank you. I am so delighted to be here.
So delighted to have you here and to be talking about this great show. The press photos alone are mind-blowing. They're fabulous. So can we start by having you tell us a little bit about what All the Birds of the World is about?
Yes. So All the Birds of the World is a completely original fairy tale that I wrote as part of my Enchanted Islands project. And I am right now in rehearsals working with the folks at Fifth Wall Studio in Williamsburg and this incredible team of my costume designer, Jennifer Parr, director, Nikki Miller, aerial rigging coordinator, Benny Ozon, and rig designer, Jonathan Amaro, as well as the team from Fifth Wall, to create a marvelous new staging in which I will take flight. Literally, because Fifth Wall does aerial performance. So for All the Birds, I invented the mythology that every 1,000 years, all of the great birds of the world, so that's Phoenix and Rock from the 1001 Nights and Thunderbird and Hugin and Munin and the Harpies and Yatagarasu from Japanese mythology, all of these birds assemble every 1,000 years to perform a sacred ritual that they agreed to perform at the start of all things. And this year, they've gathered, but something has gone wrong. And there happens to be a little mortal mockingbird who is listening in and trying to catch a glimpse of her, of these great big cousin birds. And they catch her. And at first, it seems like that's a source of danger, but then it turns into a possible opportunity. And beyond that, if you want to know what happens, you got to come see the show.
Yes, great lead in there. Curious to know, with all this like great mythology and whatnot involved, where did you come up with the idea for the show?
So my first acting job out of acting school was doing Twelfth Night up on in a place called Deer Isle, Maine, which is an island off the coast. It's like down east. It's not too far from Acadia. And it was an absolutely magical experience, not only because I was, you know, like a kid doing Shakespeare and this idyllic setting with some wonderful people, but also because I really connected with the place and a number of other artists who live and work there. One of them is this incredible sculptor named Peter Beeritz, who has spent 30 or 40 years creating a woodland art installation alongside a jam shop, a jam kitchen, where they make jams and jellies. So the place itself is called Nervous Nelly's Jams and Jellies. And Peter himself is like an internationally renowned sculptor. And he came to see the Shakespeare. I ended up going back year after year during doing Shakespeare in the summer there. And we became friends. And we share a lot of love for mythology and fairy lore. And in 2019, I collaborated with him on a production of a play that I wrote and performed in called Avalon, which is a epic retelling of the Arthurian Morgan Le Fay Merlin story. And we performed it in his woods. He built a 3-story wizard's tower for us as part of our set. And I went to visit when it was half built and climbed up the 2 unfinished stories. And I looked down in the woods behind us and there was like a 30-foot diameter nest, bird's nest, built out of essentially tree branches. And I was like, Peter, is that a rock's nest? And he looked at me and he was like, you know what a roc is? And for anyone who doesn't know, the roc is this extraordinary, legendary bird from the 1001 Nights fame and other lore from the Middle East that could like pick up an elephant and carry it in its talons. Just extraordinary, extraordinary bird. So we had this moment of sort of delightful connection around shared love of this lore. And in that moment, I thought, oh my goodness, I should write a tale to tell from the center of that nest. And I pitched it to Peter and he loved that idea. And from the start, I thought, well, it would be wonderful to also bring visual storytelling through costume into the project. And so I reached out to my friend Jennifer Parr, who's just a wild genius. As you say, like looking at the images which come from last summer when we performed the stories up in Maine. I love playing dress up. You know, like here we are, we're actors, right? Like we sort of transform through adornment in a way. And I also have profound admiration and love for costume artistry. And I worked with Jennifer for a bunch of years. She actually costumed me in that for that first 12th night that I did up in Maine. And so we have a long-standing rapport and relationship. And I just think she's a genius. And so I reached out and I was like, Jennifer, I'm working with Peter Beeritz on this project where I'm going to write fairy tales to tell in the woods. And I want you to make like some couture garments for me to wear while telling them. What do you think? And she was like very meaningful how enthusiastic she was about joining the team as a partner in the storytelling. And so the costume that she created for all the birds of the world has a couple hundred, I think, individual handmade fabric feathers. Each one is like embroidered and hand painted, and they're assembled in this cloak that is really spectacular. And then that goes over. Last summer I had a sequined sort of art deco gown underneath. For this iteration of the show, she's creating a bodysuit that can fly because I'll be in a harness, you know, I'll be in an aerial harness. And the cape, it's I don't want to oversell it, but I find it extremely magical in the air.
Oh, that sounds so cool. So you had mentioned that this show played previously in Maine last summer. Now it's here in New York. What has it been like developing this iteration of the show?
Yeah, so last summer, I told this story from the center of that bird's nest in the woods. And we had, you know, we had audiences who came because they planned to come, but then we also had audience who happened to be wandering through the woods to, you know, in this art park and came across us and then were taken by what was happening. In that performance version, I was doing full out storytelling from a single place. I had a perch in the middle of the nest and I told the story from there. I think of it sort of as Fairy Queen story hour. It has like the vibe of you're wandering through the woods and you come across the Fairy Queen and she's got a storybook and she's going to tell you a story. In this version, what we're creating is a much more fully embodied performance. It will still begin in that Fairy Queen story hour vibe, but then it will kind of take over the space. The story expands from the storybook in my lap into a more movable feast that eventually in the sort of climactic section of the performance goes up in the air. Working with the new members of my team has allowed me to even more fully embody the story. You know, when I told it last summer, I was creating, you know, each of the birds has its own voice and there's a really sort of fun play to telling the story and shifting from the voice of one to the voice of the other. And in this, you know, I'm working, for example, with Nikki, my director choreographer, on the physicalization of each bird, which is not, I'm still telling you a story. It's not a play, right? Like it's not a one woman show and that I'm hopping from one character to the next. I'm the narrator too. However, all of these birds have their own physicality and we're actually So Fifth Wall Studio is a pretty malleable performance space, and we'll have the audience in a kind, it's sort of in the round, it'll be in a horseshoe shape, but we've actually, we're creating sections of the audience that will be associated with each of several of the great birds. So they'll, you can, when you arrive, you can choose to sit in the Thunderbird section, and all the pillows and chairs will have sort of a Thunderbird vibe, or you can choose to sit in the Phoenix section where, you know, it's all fiery reds and purples and oranges, or you can sit in the Harpy section or the Pomola section, which is a snow and ice bird, legendary bird who hails from Katahdin in Maine. So there's like, there is a much more curated audience experience this time around. And I'm thrilled to see how people respond.
That sounds so cool. I love the scene of this. This sounds amazing. So I mean, with all of this happening, is there a message or thought that you're hoping the audiences will take away from your show?
Yeah. So I love to show an audience a good time. You know, like I really want people to enjoy themselves, to be entertained, to laugh, to let the beauty of the language, at least some of it, wash over them, to just revel in the beauty and spectacle of what we're making. And I'm very aware that storytellers make choices about whose stories matter, and that all storytellers have a point of view. We all have a worldview, you know, and like as a femme person living in a world where there's a certain like cis white male perspective that somehow has gotten the rep of being neutral, like not a point of view, and everyone else is some extra point of view. I'm very aware that in my own work, I am offering a challenge and an antidote to that perspective. So I very much come from a place of seeing myself as a part of a living whole, you know, the sort of idea of all of our relations here in the world, that you and I are brother and sister, and that we are related to all of the living creatures and the earth herself. And like that perspective infuses this story that I've written, and you go along with the story, and in doing so, that point of view, you know, kind of lives in your body for the time that you're experiencing the story. And there is very much in a kind of gently included way a question about how we are treating our planet as humans. There are no humans in the story, but they're all birds. But something has happened in the fiction of the story. Something has happened in the last 1,000 years that has affected the ability of these great birds to perform the ritual that essentially enables all life to continue. So there is definitely a climate change theme in there without it being even referenced directly at any time.
Very cool. I love that. That is a great message, a very timely message too. So my final question for this first part is, who do you hope have access to all the birds of the world?
Yeah, so this is definitely an experience that is welcoming for people of all ages. It's definitely something that kids will enjoy, but it's also something that adults will enjoy. Not even, you don't even have to be an adult with a child. Last summer, there was a point after telling all the birds of the world, this little kid came up to me and just gave me a silent 30-second hug. And I was like, okay, well, I'm probably doing something right if that's happening. And then there was an older lady who came to every story throughout the week that I was in residence. She just came every time. She heard each of the stories several times and would sit in the back and just like laugh along with them and cry a little and have such deep, have a really joyful and deep emotional experience with them. So first of all, it's appropriate for audiences of all ages. If you love a good story, if you're interested in fairy tales or mythology or birds, or you just, you know, like want to see how Hugin and Munin fight with each other, there's something for you. In addition, we are adding an ASL interpreter to our team for one of the performances that's to be announced, which we're working out scheduling, but there will definitely be at least one of the performances that will have that additional accessibility feature, which I'm really thrilled about. It's something that I had hoped to accomplish last summer in Maine, but, you know, scrambling to get things together and lack of resources got in the way. And so to be able to do it here for our New York premiere is really meaningful to me.
Second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or just some of your favorites? And because we are dealing with, you know, dance and performance art, I want to open it up to that as well.
Yeah, what a beautiful question. We are all standing on the shoulders of giants, you know, and I'm always grateful both to the artists I've encountered in my own IRL and to the greats whose work I've encountered. And I also feel like this is a question that, like, the answer changes from day to day and the full list is so long. So forgive me in advance for not name checking all of those giants who mean so much in my own life as an artist and a person. I found my way to Shakespeare early. I had a like child's encyclopedia that had been in my mom's family, and it had kids' versions of Shakespeare's plays where it would be like story, 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 and then a section of the actual text. And you know, you're like reading Puck or you're reading a little bit of Macbeth or whatever. And I have a big language brain, and I was so excited by the writing itself, by the way that it lights us up. You know, there's studies about how Shakespeare's, because he'll do something like take a verb, a word like child, and make a construction that is, he fathered me and then I childed him, right? Like, and it does something where the unorthodox use of the language lights up extra parts of our brain. So I got lit up by Shakespeare early. And then, you know, like as I grew, I worked on Shakespeare a whole lot, also find places to where I'm challenged by his limitations, you know, such an extraordinary writer and still a product of his time. And there's a lot of racism and sexism and problematic stuff in there where he knew better. I want to say he knew better. Jumping to the immediate moment in my life, I'm so inspired by the artists I'm actually working with right now. I just went last night to see my director, Nikki Miller's thesis up at Sarah Lawrence. She is doing performance studies, a graduate degree in performance studies up there. And she created a piece that incorporates aerial work and some beautiful personal text and choreography on a couple of other dancers. And it was just it's very exciting to keep expanding our ideas of what theater can do, what this nearly limitless form can hold, how we can tell stories, how we can use our whole bodies, our whole imagination, our voices, ourselves to channel ideas and offer them to an audience. I just get really, I think to make a draw a line between those two first examples of artists who inspire me, artists who are outside the boxes, right? Like artists who are juxtaposing things we haven't thought of juxtaposing before. I find myself so inspired by that because I think it's easy to get sort of weighed down in a sense of just doing the traditions, just doing what other people we know is safe. But of course, art isn't meant to be safe. Art is meant to be true. And if you're only concerned with safety, you're never going to get to the truth.
Yes. Yeah, say that again for the people in the back. Absolutely. Well, this leads to my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
I want to share two with you. One of the reasons how I came to Shakespeare early, I grew up in Oregon, and my parents took me and my brothers to see a show at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland when I was like 9 or 10. And they have a huge outdoor Elizabethan theater that's in the round that's open to the sky. It's like the Globe. And I don't remember anything about the play really, except the feeling of being in my seat as the sky went, you know, pale purple and blue. And the stage in the memory, I mean, I can feel where I was. It's a very kinesthetic memory. The stage is just glowing like an orange jewel, like a ruby. And I felt so full of a simultaneous sense of being home and being somewhere I had never been before. And my goodness, like, that feeling is home base for me. I am always, always searching for it, always striving to create it in my own work for audiences who come. And it really is, it's those two feelings married, right? Like, I belong here, and what is this place? I've never been here before. Like that, and I think that's what we're trying to do, right? Like, always. And again, like, to touch that theme of safety again, that doesn't mean unsafe, right? Like, that doesn't mean you're not okay. We always want to ensure that we're safe enough to go on an imaginative journey that will challenge us, that will involve discovery. And that marrying that sense of what is this? It's all new. I don't know it at all, with the feeling of being home. I think that's the kind, that's the ruby. That's the jewel I'm reaching for. And then I combine that with a memory from more recently in my life, which was the opening night of my play R and J and Z, which was my first big writing project as a playwright, which is now published. It's available from Original Works Publishing. Go check it out. Get your copies. It starts with Act 5 of Romeo and Juliet, and it continues past the end point of Shakespeare's play in verse. And the dead come back to life, and it's opportunity to really explore what the aftermath of the events of Shakespeare's play might be like, in a way that, you know, sort of honors horror movies, modern horror genre on one hand, and Shakespeare's work on the other. Opening night, as we moved through the first 10 minutes of the play, the part that the audience knows, there was this incredible pressure cooker feeling on us, because we had no idea if the audience would like it. We had no idea if people would respond. But also, here we were doing this incredibly well-known story in a way that we knew, like, the audience could feel the end coming, and they had no idea what was going to happen next. And that, like, pressure cooker and the explosion into the continued story that is in my play had that same feeling of, I feel at home here. Like, we've built this play, we've rehearsed it over and over, we know our lines, we know our blocking, we know the fights, we know the gore effects, we know it, we know each other, we're safe with each other, and oh my goodness, what's going to happen? Like, we still didn't know what was going to happen. Like, we were able to create that delightful, tantalizing moment of not knowing what comes next. So.
Those are amazing. Oh, I love those memories. Thank you so much for sharing those.
Thanks for asking.
As we wrap things up, I would love to know, do you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
Yeah, well, so this All the Birds of the World is a part of my larger Enchanted Islands project, which there are currently two other fairy tales with their own gorgeous costumes. And I'll be developing more, going to be performing after this run at Fifth Wall in April. I'm going to be performing All the Birds of the World up at Stone Mountain Farm on May 18th, I believe it is, as part of their, they have a huge day-long Beltane festival up there. And they're affiliated with Fifth Wall, so I'm going to get to do another aerial performance of this piece up there. And then in the summer, dates to be determined, I'll be going back up to Deer Isle to do another residency up there with the stories. And folks can keep track of that by going to my website, which is melodybates.com, or searching for Enchanted Island.
That is amazing. Well, my final question for this interview is, if our listeners would like more information about All the Birds of the World or about you, perhaps they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
Best way to do that is, again, my website, melodybates.com. There's a fun Enchanted Islands page on Facebook that you can find, and you can also find me on Instagram at xxxoooomelody.
Wonderful. Well, Melody, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, for sharing this amazing, amazing piece. It sounds incredible. I'm so excited for it. And I just thank you so much for your time today.
Oh my goodness, you're a gem. I had such a good time talking to you. Thank you so much for your insight and your curiosity and for doing this. It is a service to our community. I am grateful.
Thank you so much. My guest today has been the writer, performer, and producer, Melody Bates, whose incredible show being presented by Melody Bates and Fifth Wall Studio is All the Birds of the World. It's playing April 4th through the 6th at Fifth Wall Studio, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting eventbrite.com. We also have some contact information for Melody, which we'll be posting in our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you get your tickets now for this high-flying show, this incredible work, All the Birds of the World, playing April 4th through the 6th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies, and keep talking about the theater.
In a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.